course, the Hebrew wives do not do that. God. First, Pharaoh then gets all the little baby boys into the River Nile. Again, control the population growth of Hebrews in the second. Moses, water, protects him. Daughter, daughter, that you're going to need someone to child, and in verse 8 it tells us that she went mother. For a period of time, Moses' mother nursed young Moses. Later brought him, reared in the house of Pharaoh. Moses was the ripe old age of 40. He chose rather to suffer ill treatment God than to enjoy. About verse 24, as an example of tales about that. 7. Now the purpose is what? To find a very brief rehearsal of this portion of history of the Hebrew people. Why is Stephen setting forth such detailed history of this period? All right, and so that was true. Even Moses didn't kill him, but they rejected what he called in question. Going back to Acts chapter 7, the text of verse 22 tells us that Moses was instructed in all the mighty in his words, well nigh 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit. Seeing one of them strong, he did not smite him. Do about it. How does Moses figure out that somebody did know about it? Well, we know that eventually Pharaoh found out about it. He tried to kill Moses. Yeah. Verse 15, he sought to kill him. Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh, dwelt in the land, sat down, fell. That brings you. As he fled from the land of Egypt, he went to Midian and sat as well. Who does he eventually meet? What then? All right. He meets Jethro. All right. More that I know of, dealt with. Right. There's questions about the action. No, the object of God is wrong. Here, he object 7th, where the 30 also wants to sign 6. 30, 40 years fulfilled, an angel flame of fire in a bush. Moses saw it on sight as he appeared to behold the voice of the Lord, the God of thy fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Moses trembled and was not. Behold, the Lord said unto him, loose the shoe, the place whereon thou art. Heard their groanings. Send thee in. Moses, whom is saying, ruler, him, God sent. Ruler, liberer, with the hand push. This man led forth, wrought wonders and signs in Egypt, the sea, 40 years. Moses was 40 years old, shepherd for 40 years, led them for clothes. Because of where Moses led these people here, he was familiar with this land, shepherd. Go back to the account. God appeared to me up out of the land of Egypt. I want to call your attention. God appeared to me in a bush that burn up. Certainly seem like all our attention sight like that. And Moses pondered over what this obviously meant. And so God begins telling down verse 8, deliver them out of the land or the hand of the Egyptians and bring up out of the land or that land into a good land, a large land flowing. Know that that was the land God had promised fathers, Abraham, Jacob. Here he identifies some of the inhabitants of the land. Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, identified Abraham, this is chapter 15, beginning about verse 8, where the borders of the land were promised unto Abraham. Now my question is this. How does Moses respond to the instruction? I want to send you down to bring him out. Reminds Moses, Pharaoh, that he feared no more danger. Pharaoh. How does Moses respond? Somebody else. I like the way you said that. It's almost as if send anybody, but don't send somebody else. Who am I? Verse 11. To go down and to bring the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. What does God tell Moses? Who am I that I should do this? Are you? You're the one I picked. Yes, very well. I'll be with you. We've already talked about Joseph. God was with Joseph and blessed Joseph. Two, God says unto Moses, you're the one that I picked. I'll be with you. What makes Moses think that? Well, do we really see Moses thinking that he can do this, or he just doesn't want to? He don't want to. Well, that was one of his excuses. Drop down to verse 13. He says, when I go, I tell them that you're with me, they're going to want to know. God tell him? I am that I am. Tell them I am. Tell them I am. That becomes another very important statement as we come over into the New Testament. And Jesus uses that statement, I am,
to identify himself.
I was, I am today, always will be, the source of what is. What do you think that would do to Moses? Who shall I say has sent? Moses came and said, I am sent. That kind of constitutes credentials, doesn't it? The one who made everything sent. Says in verse 10, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. And then in verse 13, he says, O Lord, send thy favor by thy hand of him whom thou wilt send. There it is. Don't send anybody, but don't send me. But God had put him. I want you to go. Now, what's the solution to not being an enemy speaker? Mount Sinai. It's another term used to identify Mount Sinai. And we know that as we come to
not present. Later, they think he was. Blessed. Yes, David, and then Ken. We don't see down the road very far. In fact,
look at verse 16. Verse 16. And he, that is Aaron, shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and it shall come to pass that he shall be to thee a mouth, and thou shalt be to him as God. Now, as that develops further in the 7th chapter, look at verse 1. Chapter 7, verse 1. And Jehovah said unto Moses, see, I have made thee as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. Now what did we just learn that Aaron was to be unto Moses? A spokesman. Well then what is a prophet? A spokesman. Now, this is the easiest way I know to illustrate that. Yes, we see prophets identifying their work as sometimes telling what's going to be. But this helps us to see, I believe, very clearly, easy way to demonstrate to someone that a prophet is a mouthpiece, a spokesman for someone else. In this instance, Aaron was a prophet for Moses, mouthpiece or spokesman. All right, now, Pharaoh, when God is telling Moses, I want you to go down and bring the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. Does he tell Moses how Pharaoh is going to respond? Yes. How is Pharaoh going to respond? All right, he's not going to do it. If you'll back up to verse 21 of chapter 4, it says, and Jehovah said unto Moses, when thou goest back into Egypt, see that thou do before Pharaoh all the wonders which I put in thy hand, but I will harden his heart, and he will not let the people go. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith Jehovah, Israel is my son, my firstborn. And I have said unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And thou hast refused to let him go. Behold, I will slay thy son, thy firstborn. That's going to be very, very important in our study. The people of God were identified as His Son. I want you to let Him go. But He's not going to do that. And consequently, you tell Pharaoh that I'm going to kill his first son. Now, remember that thought. Yes, David?
That's very ironic because when Moses was born, they wanted to kill all the children all the boys. As a matter of fact, now the tables are turning around.
Sure are, aren't they? Okay. All right. Now, sometimes when we study through this period of the Exodus, we raise questions, and it's a good question to raise. God said, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will not let the people go. You'll note that same expression several times in the period of the Exodus. I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Or the text tells us that Jehovah hardened Pharaoh's heart. But you'll also notice the expression, for example, in Exodus chapter 8 and in verse 15. It too occurs a number of times. It says, but when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as Jehovah had spoken. Pharaoh hardened his heart. Now, we look at this and we say, well, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. And to the Calvinist, he says, you see, it says right there that here's a response that Pharaoh didn't have any choice. God did this to him. But then we counter and say, yes, Pharaoh hardened his own heart. How do we reconcile the two statements? God hardened Pharaoh's heart, but Pharaoh hardened his own heart. How so? Randy?
Pharaoh hardened his heart against the word of God.
All right. All right. All right. Juan?
From what I can tell, I mean, God knows everything, so God would have been able to probably provide a proof that Pharaoh would have taken and said, well, this is true. And so since God kind of knows the way that He is, then He can sit there and say, these things I know will not make Him follow me or follow my words. So that's one way that He did harden His heart. He knew these things weren't going to
All right. All right. Any change that was forthcoming, as we see from the text, was only temporary. He did back up. But, Joey?
My answer would be two ways of saying the same thing. God allowed Pharaoh to be stubborn and use that against him to bring about his own will.
All right, well put. When we think about an illustration of this, how many of you ever ask your little one to go clean the room? Bruce, go ahead. All right.
But you know, until they decide to change that, they can come back, they can come to God.
All right. Okay. Larry?
It's almost like the other thing to God. This is you can impose me and my God to be.
Ah.
And then use this as an example. That's why God is just the camp to keep continuing. Because time and time and time again, Pharaoh and his God to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, when we think about trying to illustrate this, have you ever asked your little ones to go and clean up their room and find that they didn't do that right away? And so you ask again, or maybe you tell again, to go clean your room. And, oh yes, Mom, I'd be happy to do that. And we just see them bounce in there very cheerfully and take care of the job, right? Not exactly so. And sometimes it gets a little intense. And what happens nearly every time you ask that that be done? More resistance. All right. Could it then be said that you hardened the child's heart by asking them to do this? Something they didn't want to do. I think there's some parallels there. Though it's not identical in every respect, there are some parallels in that illustration. When God said to Pharaoh, "Let my people go 3 days into the wilderness that they may worship me." And Pharaoh did not want to do that. Now, there are all kinds of elements in that mix. We say, well, Pharaoh had a built-in workforce here that he didn't want to risk. That's true. But look at his question in chapter 5 of the book of Exodus, in verse 2. "Who is Jehovah that I should hearken unto his voice to let Israel go? I know not Jehovah, and moreover, I will not let Israel go." Randy? Yes.
And the funny thing is, they all agreed with Pharaoh.
They did, didn't they? Yeah.
They never disagreed. They never told him to do anything he didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses has introduced him to a new God, one that he doesn't know. They're telling him to do something he doesn't want to do. That's what's hard.
Yes. This is tough, isn't it?
First time it's ever happened.
Never, God agreeing with him. Yeah. I don't want to do that. Now, that becomes rather interesting because we know that these plagues, though some say that these plagues were against Pharaoh, that's true, but that was not the only object of these plagues. Turn, if you will, in your Bible to Exodus chapter 12. And I'm going to need some readers. Chris Simmons, would you read for me Exodus chapter 12, verse 12? And Randy, Numbers chapter 13, I'm sorry, 33 it is, chapter 33, verse 4. And then Juan, would you be prepared with Exodus chapter 18, verse 11. And I suppose that will be sufficient for just now. All right, Chris, Exodus 12, verse 12.
"For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both men and beasts. Against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord."
That's key. This is not just about Pharaoh. This is against all the gods of Egypt. Read further, Randy, if you will, please. Numbers 33, verse 4.
"While the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn whom the Lord had struck down among them, the Lord also had executed judgments on their gods."
All right, that's important, isn't it? This was not a personal thing between God and Pharaoh. It was the gods of Egypt. And, of course, Pharaoh was considered as a god. But this was against the gods of Egypt. Juan, please, Exodus chapter 18, verse 11.
"Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods, for in the very thing in which they behaved proudly, he was above them."
All right, Jenny? Did I give you one? Well, I should have. I will. Joshua 24, verse 14, please. That's interesting as well, because what we learn here is that even among the Israelites, they had regard for the gods of Egypt. Do we see that? It's imperative that the people of God and that the Egyptians understand who God is. Now, God used the stubbornness of Pharaoh to prove his authority over the gods of Egypt, so that the Egyptians would know and so that his people would know who God is. Yes. Yes. So this was not just a brand new thing that, as Aaron explained, I put their gold into the fire and out came this calf. No, this was in their history. They saw this in Egypt. They had regard for this in Egypt. And we'll talk, of course, more about that. But look how many times it's said that the Egyptians may know that I am Jehovah and that thou shalt know that I am Jehovah. They had to understand this, not just the Egyptians, but God's people needed to know who God is. Now, there's a reason for that. You remember when they came out of the land of Egypt? Again, we'll talk more about this in chronological order when we get to it, but when they crossed over the Red Sea, they sung a song declaring the greatness of God. When the period of wilderness wandering was past, and they crossed over the Jordan River into the Promised Land, the pillar of stones was to serve the purpose so that they might teach their children who God is. And so we see all these reminders, the Passover and the stones and the consecration of the firstborn. All of these were to serve the purpose of reminding them lest they forget who God is. Now that began, appropriately so, with the stubbornness of Pharaoh. So when we go back here and we note that God hardened Pharaoh's heart, He used Pharaoh's stubbornness to show the Egyptians, to show Pharaoh, and to show the children of Israel who He is. And we don't want to miss that in our passing through this portion of the study.
It's important also to point out God did not make Pharaoh stubborn.
No.
Pharaoh chose to be stubborn, and God used that for His own purpose. And there's a difference there.
Yes, sir. Stubbornness is a sin. And God allowed Pharaoh to exercise His will, and God used that to demonstrate who God is. Okay? Excellent. All right. Plagues. The plagues follow. Now, as we study about the plagues, I want us to see, as we've looked at these passages, that their purpose was to demonstrate the power of God over the gods of the Egyptians. And certainly that would include Pharaoh, as we will see concerning the tenth plague. Now, by the way, when we talk about the plagues, it's perhaps out of order in our sequence here to point this out now, but have you ever wondered how that man has attempted to explain the plagues of Egypt without God? Have you ever read an explanation, a naturalistic explanation of the plagues? I came across this one. I thought that was interesting. It says that really what occurred was violent rainstorms that occurred in the mountains of Ethiopia. You didn't know that, did you? This writer goes on to say the first plague, blood, is the red clay swept down into the Nile from the Ethiopian highlands. The mud then choked the fish in the area inhabited by the Israelites. The fish clogged the swamps where the frogs lived. The fish, soon infected with anthrax, caused the frogs, the second plague, to leave the Nile for cool areas, taking refuge in people's houses. But since the frogs were already infected with the disease, they died in their new habitats. As a consequence, lice, the third plague, and flies, the fourth plague, began to multiply, feeding off the dead frogs. This gave rise to a pestilence that attacked animals, the fifth plague, because the cattle were feeding on grass, which by then had also become infected. In man, the symptom of the same disease was boils, the sixth plague. The second sequence of plagues, according to this explanation, is related to atmospheric and climatic conditions in Egypt, hailstorms. The seventh plague came out of nowhere. Although not common, hailstorms do occur, rarely in Upper Egypt and occasionally in Lower Egypt during the late spring and early fall. In this reconstruction, the hailstorm was followed by the eighth plague, locust, a more common occurrence. The ninth plague, darkness, was a Libyan dust storm. Now here you've got a problem with this naturalistic explanation when you come to the tenth plague. How do you explain that one? Very selective. The death of the firstborn of everything. Now, Now, this writer doesn't attempt to explain that one. But you see, the Bible does. Yes. Well, the mentality of a modernist, someone explained that to me years ago and said that give a modernist a miracle and he has to explain it away. And that's right. You can't just ignore it. You've got to explain it. Now, when we begin to look at the plagues that occurred upon the land of Egypt, we've seen that the Scriptures teach clearly that this was to demonstrate God's power over the Egyptian gods. Now, we mentioned the snake, how that Aaron was to take his rod and throw it down and it would become a serpent, and he would take it up again and it would become a rod once again in his hand, and this was to be a sign. Why would you suppose that that would be such a sign among those who were in Egypt? What was the significance of a snake in Egypt, in particular a cobra? Some of you have seen, no doubt, King Tut's image or pictures. And what do the Egyptians typically put on their crown? A cobra, ready to strike. Why? Don't know why? Well, a sign of authority, but it was there as an indication of the power of the Pharaoh. Yes, power or authority. Somewhat like a god. But what happened when Moses threw his rod down and the magicians threw their rods down? His snake ate theirs. Now what does that suggest? The authority of God through Moses over the Egyptians. There was a serpent, yes. Not good.
Just seems real befitting. The story there that, you know, that he was resistant to Moses and the heart, and so being that resistant to God and wearing a serpent, let me start
off. Yeah, a bit of irony there. Yes. Well, let's see if we can find an answer to that by the time we get to the end of the book of Exodus. Okay, that's a good question. How did the people perceive the plagues? Yeah, good question. Okay, well, let's look at these for just a moment. What I put on the board up here is a chart to suggest to us the power of God over the gods of the Egyptians. This is simply a listing of the plagues, the turning water to blood, the frogs covering the land, the dust of the earth became lice, the swarm of flies, and then the death of the cattle, and then of course the boils and the hail that was brought upon Egypt, the locusts, and then the darkness, and then the death of the firstborn. I would invite you to do some study. It's very simple to Google a question and come up with some pretty good information about the gods of Egypt. And we want to spend a little bit of time on that. When we think of the Nile River, how that it became blood. This plague was against the god Hapi, the spirit of the Nile, in flood stage. Now, we've talked about how that the Nile would overflow its banks once a year, and how that that became a blessing to the Egyptians in a very special way, because if it ran over the banks, in other words, if the flood was too much, then of course it was devastating. If the overflow of the banks was not enough, then there was famine in the land of Egypt. So if it was just right, who got the praise? The God of the River Nile, He's taking care of us. Now, interestingly enough, the River Nile also was recognized because of the fish goddess, and I'll spell that, H-A-T-M-E-Y-T. But when the waters in the Nile River became blood, now we see that the Nile is no longer a blessing upon Egypt, but it has become a curse. What happened to the fish that were in the Nile? They died. What happened to the goddess of the fish? God has authority. Nothing. Yes. 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 And when you come to the frogs were recognized as representation of the goddess of fertility. Now I have two names. One is H-E-K-T. The other is Isis. And I'm not sure why I have those different sources perhaps. But the fertility goddess represented by the frog. Now what happens when you have frogs that are everywhere? This fertility goddess cannot control the production of frogs. And then when the frogs die, what does that say to the fertility goddess? You see, instead of a blessing, now they're gathering them up and they're piling them in heaps and they stink. You want to serve a God like that? You see, God has authority over the fertility goddess of the Egyptians. And then, of course, the lice. One source that I read said that at present there is no known link between this particular plague and a god of the Egyptian pantheon. However, the Egyptian magicians, unable to duplicate this plague, attributed it to, quote, the finger of God, Exodus chapter 8, verse 19, and they withdraw. The point being that they had no authority over the God that brought about these plagues. And we'll have to talk more about these in our next study. All right.